To the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and you might be able to hear that I have a big smile on my face because instead of talking about war, go ahead and let it play, man. Instead of talking about war and torture and emergency powers and the end of the American Republic, we're going to be talking about war and torture and the end of the make-believe Republic of the Star Wars universe. And it's a nice Saturday afternoon, and my last radio show before the final Star Wars movie, Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, hits the theaters this Thursday, actually this Wednesday at midnight. I already got my ticket. And I should tell you that, yes, I accept that I'm a dork, and yes, I'm about to do a two-hour show about Star Wars. And the first hour is me, and the second an interview with Mark Thornton from the Mises Institute. But I should have you know that I'm really only like a level two or three dork when it comes to Star Wars dorkitude. I don't have any costumes, and, you know, I'm not quite as bad as some of the Star Wars dorks out there, so don't hold it against me. But I really do love Star Wars. I grew up on Star Wars. When I was 5 years old and 6 years old, my friend Ryan would come over after school every day, and we would watch, I guess, the first 10 minutes of Star Wars over and over and over again before his mom came to pick him up. And it never occurred to us to leave off and start, you know, the next day where we left off the day before. But anyway, I just love Star Wars, and some of the very first lessons about politics that I ever learned in my life were about Star Wars. I still remember being probably maybe 6 or 7 years old and standing in the kitchen and asking my mom, what's a Senate? And her explaining something to the effect of, well, you know, that's where free people send somebody represents them to go and decide the way things are going to be, the way you'd explain a Senate to a seven-year-old, right? And so I said, well, what does it mean then that the emperor has just dissolved the Senate permanently? And, you know, of course, so before I learned about George Washington and the cherry tree or Davy Crockett and the wild frontier, I learned about Darth Vader has a Death Star now. And so he doesn't really care what you think because he can kill you. So this is my first introduction into the political world. And, you know, you could argue that it had its effect. The first trilogy, episodes 4, 5, and 6, are about Luke Skywalker, the heroic hero, and the Rebel Alliance and their war against the evil galactic empire that they have to overthrow. And it was always left to our imagination how the Republic had become the empire in the first place. Just little hints dropped here and there about Clone Wars and such. But basically, in the first three movies that we remember from when we were kids, the reason that Star Wars so popular really with everybody is because the themes in there are of liberty and power. You know, the struggle between the rebels and the galactic tyranny. There are themes about technology and the role that it plays in our lives. On one hand, R2-D2 comes and saves our butt at the last minute every time. But on the other hand, Imperial Star Destroyers and Death Stars and lightsabers sometimes can cause us great pain. Double-edged sabers, so to speak. Obviously, there's lots of themes about loyalty and friendship and dedication. You know, Chewbacca and Han Solo are best homeboys. And you also have the redemption of Darth Vader and the redemption of Han Solo, who after all starts out kind of a drug dealer, kind of guy who would shoot somebody under the table. I don't care if they remake the movie or not. That's the way it really happened, was he really shot Greedo under the table. He's the kind of guy who would do that. And then, you know, by the end of Return of the Jedi, he's kind of grown into this hardcore revolutionary hero type. And, of course, Lando Calrissian, the backstabber, Mr. Colt 45, he ends up making right in the end and saving Han Solo's life and all that kind of cool stuff. But anyway, so for the rest of this show, basically I'm going to explain episode 1, 2, and 3 and how the Republic became the Empire. And I got a lot of good sound bites and stuff here, so everybody hang out. It's the Weekend Interview Show on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Tattoo.
right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. My website is weekendinterviewshow.com. It's usually about serious stuff, so if you want to go and hear the archives of serious topics today, then go to weekendinterviewshow.com and click stream or download on any one of the, I don't know how many, 80 or something interviews up there. Here's my hero, Luke Skywalker.
I can't get involved. I've got work to do. It's not that I like the Empire. I hate it, but there's nothing I can do about it right now.
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic. Before the Dark Times. Before the Empire.
Okay, right. So then the question is, how did the Republic become the Empire? So I have here the book of Star Wars from the Adventures of Luke Skywalker from 1977. 1976. Anyway, this is from the prologue of Star Wars before they even called it A New Hope back in the day. And this is the story it tells here. Another galaxy, another time. The Old Republic was the Republic of legend, greater than distance or time. No need to note where it was or whence it came, only to know that it was the Republic. Once, under the wise rule of the Senate and the protection of the Jedi Knights, the Republic throve and grew. But as often happens with wealth and when wealth and power pass beyond admirable and attain the awesome, then appear those evil ones who have greed to match. So it was with the Republic at its height. Like the greatest of trees, able to withstand any external attack, the Republic rotted from within, though the danger was not visible from outside. Aided and abetted by restless, power-hungry individuals within the government and the massive organs of commerce, the ambitious Senator Palpatine caused himself to be elected President of the Republic. He promised to reunite the disaffected among the people and restore the remembered glory of the Republic. Once secure in office, he declared himself Emperor, shutting himself away from the populace. Having exterminated through treachery and deception the Jedi Knights, guardians of justice in the galaxy, the Imperial governors and bureaucrats prepared to institute a reign of terror among the disheartened worlds of the galaxy. Many used the Imperial forces and the name of the Emperor to further their own personal ambitions. But a small number of systems rebelled at these new outrages. Declaring themselves opposed to the new order, they began the great battle to restore the Old Republic. From the beginning, they were vastly outnumbered by the systems held in thrall by the Emperor. In those first dark days, it seemed certain the bright flame of resistance would be extinguished before it could cast the light of new truth across a galaxy of oppressed and beaten peoples. From the first saga, Journal of the Wills. And apparently, the Journal of the Wills thing, the story goes that R2-D2 survives all six movies, and 100 years later, he tells the whole story to some guy named Will or something, who writes the Journal of the Will. So anyway, that's where the story comes from. That's how we all know about what happened so long ago and far away in that galaxy, thanks to R2-D2. So now, how is it that this guy, Chancellor Palpatine, or how did this guy become Chancellor in the first place, and how did he make himself Emperor of the galaxy? Well, it turns out Palpatine was a senator from a little libertarian kind of nice old-school Hoppian monarchy kind of planet named Naboo. And he represented Naboo in the Galactic Senate. And he hired something called the Trade Federation to lay siege to his own planet.
This turn of events is unfortunate. We must accelerate our plans. Begin landing our troops.
My lord, is that legal?
I will make it legal.
Yes, my lord. As you wish.
Is the planet secure?
We have taken over the last pockets of primitive life forms. We are in complete control of the planet now.
Good. I will see to it that in the Senate, things stay as they are.
Okay, so there's Mr. Political Manipulation. So the Jedi heroes come, and on their way to the capital planet to find out more about politics, we get another few clues about the state of decay that the Galactic Republic is in. Clue number one, their fiat money system.
Thing, which, how's he going to pay for all this?
I have 20,000 Republic debt cards.
Republic credits? Republic credits are no good out here. I need something more real.
I don't have anything else, but credits will do fine.
No, they won't.
Credits will do fine.
No, they won't. What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that? I'm a Toydarian. My tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Yeah, sorry, your credit that says police enforced on the front of it doesn't count. So come back when you actually have some wealth to trade. So there's big clue number one that the Republic is in decay. And then, of course, they have overreaching laws far beyond reason, restricting gambling and restricting the use of drugs. And so, of course, there are giant black markets, which creates the opportunities for slaves. And here George Lucas attempts to teach your children who has a chip in their hand. Do the Jedi Knights have a chip in their hand? Right, the slaves have transmitters implanted in their bodies. Okay, so now they hurry up. They find the boy Darth Vader, whatever, and then they go off to the Galactic Senate to figure out how they're going to save their planet from the terrible Trade Federation that has invaded it. And so here's the Queen getting advice and lessons from the senator, who's really the Sith Lord, who's playing her all along.
The Republic is not what it once was. There is no civility, only politics. The Senate is full of greedy, squabbling delegates.
There is no interest in the common good.
Now, sorry about the audio quality there, guys. I don't know why that's so bad. But anyway, he goes on to manipulate her, telling her how corrupt the Republic is and how the bureaucrats, the fourth branch of government, has control now.
The bureaucrats, the true rulers of the Republic, and on the payroll of the Trade Federation, I might add. This is where our Council of Law and Strength will disappear.
So we have this weak Supreme Chancellor, this chief executive who can't get things done. Whatever will we do?
I must be frank, Your Majesty. There is little chance the Senate will act on the invasion. The Chancellor has little real power. He is mired by baseless accusations of corruption. The bureaucrats are in charge now. Our best choice would be to push for the election of a stronger Supreme Chancellor, one who could control the bureaucrats and give us justice.
You could call for a vote of no confidence in Chancellor Valorum. Our only other choice would be to submit a plea to the courts.
To be realistic, Your Majesty, I think we're going to have to accept Federation control for the time being.
Okay, so he's totally manipulating the Queen and telling her that what they really need is a strong Chancellor that can get things done and bring them justice. And here's the Queen falling for it.
Honorable representatives of the Republic, this body is not capable of action. I suggest new leadership is needed. I move for a vote of no confidence in Chancellor Valorum's leadership.
Now they will elect a new Chancellor. A strong Chancellor.
And that's what we need, don't we? A strong Chancellor. And I wonder, who's going to be the new Chancellor of the Republic?
Your Highness, Your Highness. Senator Palpatine has been nominated to succeed Valorum as Supreme Chancellor.
A surprise, to be sure. If I am elected, I promise to put an end to corruption.
I feel confident our situation will create a strong sympathy vote for us. I will be Chancellor.
It is clear to me now that the Republic no longer functions. I pray you will bring sanity and compassion back to the Senate.
Yep, that's exactly what he's going to bring.
Congratulations on your election, Chancellor.
Together, we shall bring peace and prosperity to the Republic.
Yep, it's a darn shame, but so, as George Lucas said back in 1999, the Republic comes to an end in episode one. That's why it's called The Phantom Menace. If you're a geek like me, then you already knew that Palpatine was the Sith Lord, which, by the way, sorry if I'm ruining Star Wars for anybody, but Palpatine's the Sith Lord, see? And when he reveals himself in episode three, the Jedi realize that he's controlled the galaxy for 13, 15 years or something. They're long since lost. And that is how the corrupt, evil Sith Lord poses as a really nice guy and gets himself elected Supreme Chancellor of the Republic. So when we get back, we'll talk all about the space between episodes 2 and 3, and between 1 and 2, and then flesh out episode 2 and 3 for you. And don't forget, hang tight, because in 40 minutes we're going to have Mark Thornton from the Mises Institute. Stay tuned. My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm goofing off because I'm celebrating the brand new Star Wars movies coming out next week, and so I'm having a little bit of fun up here today talking about Star Wars. And so what we learned from the original book of Star Wars, and it told the story of what happened to the Republic briefly, and it's the same thing that really happens over and over again throughout all of human history, and that is people revolt against tyranny, and they create for themselves some liberty. And the liberty, of course, leads to wealth and comfort, which, of course, being the fallible human beings we are, leads straight to greed and corruption, and we end up destroying the liberty that made us so wealthy and happy in the first place. And that's what the story of Star Wars is about. That's at least really what Episode 3 is about. And, you know, really the first three is what I mean to say. And people were kind of confused about the first three movies, and you know, the old movies are really more mythological archetypes. The farm boy and the wizard and the little friend on the side of the road and the evil Dark Lord and his apprentice and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the story of Episodes 1, 2, and 3 is really more about the political maneuvering. It's more of a 19th century palace intrigue kind of story than a kind of just 20th century shoot 'em up Western style deal. But anyway, so we've learned now how Chancellor Palpatine got himself elected. Problem is, Obi-Wan Kenobi cut his apprentice in half, so he had to recruit a new apprentice, and so he went to this guy, Count Dooku, Christopher Lee, you know, Count Dracula, who left the Jedi Order, and he hires him, you know, turns him to the dark side of the Force, and he has him go and create a clone army that we all know became the Stormtroopers. And the clone army is for the Republic, but at the same time, he begins to lead a separatist movement. And he recruits alien species only, and no coincidence, basically the people who are trying to do business and are being interfered with by the central government, or actually not so much that, because really the business interests in Episode 2 are really mercantilist interests. They're the Trade Federation and the banking clan and the Commerce Guild and that kind of thing. So that's not quite free market. But in any case, other vested interests have gained the favor of the Republic. So these people are on the out. They want to secede. Well, the Chancellor has his underling become their leader and divides the galaxy in half, basically, a la Abraham Lincoln, in order to help bring about the war. Here's Palpatine addressing the Galactic Senate at the beginning of Episode 2.
Mazagamine, Senator from Magister, that negotiations are continuing with the separatists. Peace is our objective here, not war.
This is the former queen, now termed senator, who is a main force in trying to stop the war. At the beginning of the movie, somebody tries to assassinate her, and they're trying to figure out why.
My noble colleagues, less than an hour ago, an assassination attempt was made against my life. One of my bodyguards and six others were ruthlessly and senselessly murdered. I was the target, but more importantly, the security measure before you was the target. I have led the opposition to building this army, and someone will stop at nothing to assure us passage. Wake up, senators. You must wake up. If you offer the separatists violence, they can only show violence in return. Many will lose their lives. All will lose their freedom. I pray you do not let fear pursue this disaster. Vote down the security measure, which is nothing less than a declaration of war. Does anyone here want that? I cannot believe they do.
Now, it wouldn't really make sense to think that the separatists are trying to kill the senator and the Republic who's trying to stop the Republic from creating an army. That wouldn't really make sense. Wouldn't it be much more likely that someone in the Republic who wants to make an army and go to war is the one trying to have her whack? But anyway, she's not all that smart. The thing is that Chancellor Palpatine has figured out exactly what the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace figured out in 1908 when, according to congressional investigator Norman Dodd, they asked the question,
is there any means known more effective than war, assuming you wish to alter the life of an entire people?
And the answer to that question is simply no. There is no means more effective than war, assuming you wish to alter the life of an entire people. So what you do is you have your henchmen go out and create a separatist movement.
We don't recognize the Republic here. The Republic cannot be fixed. It is time to start over.
And so, basically, this former idealist, Count Dooku, who left the Jedi Order because it was serving a corrupt republic, in fact gets hired by the most corrupt member of that republic, the Chancellor, to be his fake opposition. If Chancellor Palpatine is Abraham Lincoln, then Count Dooku, Darth Tyrannus, Christopher Lee, is Jefferson Davis, only secretly works for him all along. This is how to return a republic into an empire. All right, it's the Weekend Every Show. I'm going to let this music play and take this short commercial break, and we'll be right back talking about Star Wars.
This is the Nick Winter Show, and I do the entertaining, thank you. Let's go out with something really hot today, folks. A big hit out of 77. Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me no Star Wars, don't let them end. Star Wars, if they should fire wars, please let these Star Wars stay. And they, how about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask, did he scare you as much as he scared me? Star Wars! So scary, Star Wars! My seventh winner up here! Star Wars!
Bill Murray, ladies and gentlemen. Bill Murray. All right, I'm Scott Horton, and this is the supposedly the Weekend Interview Show up here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm celebrating episode 3 finally coming out. I made it all the way to, you know, the week of Star Wars 3 without getting hit by a bus so far. So things are looking up. I'm actually going to be able to see it. You know, it's funny because when I first started learning about America's sprint toward the edge of the cliff, my biggest fear was that it would happen before Star Wars 3 came out. So here we are. We got all the way through the new Star Wars movies, and I got to live to see it. So, you know, the UN troops can come marching on in, you know, next Friday, and I don't really care. But anyway, here we are. We're talking about Star Wars, and oh, yeah, so this is how Palpatine is manipulating the galaxy into a giant clone war. Here's his apprentice, Darth Tyrannus, manipulating the secessionists.
We must persuade the Commerce Guild and the Corporate Alliance to sign the treaty. I am a man of my word, Viceroy.
With these new battle droids we built for you, you'll have the finest army in the galaxy.
As I explained to you earlier, I am quite convinced that 10,000 more systems will rally to our cause with your support, Devil.
The Techno Union Army is at your disposal, Count.
Their banking plan will sign your treaty.
Good, very good.
Our friends from the Trade Federation have pledged their support. And when their battle droids are combined with yours, we shall have an army greater than any in the galaxy. The Jedi will be overwhelmed. The Republic will agree to any demands we make.
And at the same time, his master is telling the Jedi Knights,
I don't know how much longer I can hold off the vote, my friends. More and more star systems are joining the Separatists. I will not let this Republic that has stood for 1,000 years be split in two. My negotiations will not fail.
That's right. He's trying his best, even though he's the guy responsible for both armies. And I think I mentioned briefly before that the Separatists all being aliens is not an accident, and that's because, obviously, the Hitler analogy and the totalitarian fascism of the later movies is, just think of Empire Strikes Back. All of the Imperial officers are white males, every single one of them. There's no aliens at all on the bad guy's side, because they're Nazis. But anyway, so as we go through the story of Episode 2, where, you know, Anakin's falling in love with his girlfriend and all this stuff, we get to find out a little bit about the inside the mind of a teenage Darth Vader and how he thinks the world ought to work.
We need a system where the politicians sit down and discuss the problem, agree what's in the best interest of all the people, and then do it.
That's exactly what we do. The trouble is that people don't always agree.
Well, then they should be made to.
By whom? Who's going to make them?
I don't know. Someone.
You?
Of course not me.
But someone.
Someone wise.
Sounds an awful lot like a dictatorship to me.
Well, if it works.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? See, that, folks, is called collectivism. And Anakin is a collectivist. And he thinks that what's the best thing for all the people is what matters. When, in fact, the best thing for all the people is for them to be free and decide what's best for themselves. And that's something that he doesn't understand, which is what makes it so easy for the Chancellor to win him over in the end. So now, they've really maneuvered this great little Fort Sumter event in order to make the war the Separatists' fault by the Chancellor maneuvering Obi-Wan Kenobi into going to their stronghold and getting himself caught. And so when the Jedi go and to save him, it is the Separatists who fire the first shot. This is how Palpatine manipulates the Senator's replacement, Binks. And I know everybody hates that character, especially me. There's no room for Daffy Duck in a Star Wars movie. It's terrible. But there was a reason that they had to make a really stupid character to fill in for the Senator when she's not available to vote in the Senate. So, anyway, here's that.
It is clear that Viceroy Gunray is behind the assassination attempts on Senator Amidala. The Commerce Guild and the Corporate Alliance have both pledged their armies to Count Dooku.
Commerce Guild are preparing for war, there can be no doubt of that.
Count Dooku must have made a treaty with them.
The Senate will never approve the use of clones before the Separatists attack.
This is a crisis. The Senate must vote the Chancellor emergency powers. He can then approve the creation of an army.
But what senator would have the courage to propose such a radical amendment?
If only Senator Amidala were here.
Yeah, it is a tragedy that she's not here. And isn't that funny, too? You hear Jimmy Smits, he's the Bail Organa guy that ends up adopting Princess Leia later on. And you hear him say, the Senate will never approve the creation of an army unless we're attacked. How are we going to come up with a preemptive warfare doctrine? We don't have an Office of Special Plans here. How are we going to get this done? And so they trick stupid Jar Jar Binks into taking it as his duty to give emergency powers to the Chancellor.
In this man, who gives direct threat to the Republic, me propose that the Senate give immediately emergency powers to the Supreme Chancellor.
It is with great reluctance that I have agreed to this calling. I love democracy. I love the Republic. The power you give me, I will lay down when this crisis has abated. And as my first act with this new authority, I will create a grand army of the Republic to counter the increasing threats of the separatists.
And so it is done.
This idea of a democracy being given up, and in many cases being given up in a time of crisis, you see it throughout history, whether it's Julius Caesar or Napoleon or Adolf Hitler. You see these democracies under a lot of pressure, in a crisis situation, who end up giving up a lot of the freedoms they have and a lot of the checks and balances to somebody with a strong authority to help get them through the crisis. You know, it's not the first time a politician has created a war to try to stay in office.
To counter the increasing threats of the separatists.
It is done, Ben.
Yes, Sam Jackson, it is done. And listen to them chant the Emperor's name. Yay, dictatorship. Let's all go and vote Republican now. Hurrah. So that's how the Chancellor creates or has the power. So then what he does is he basically turns over this clone army that, lo and behold, surprise, surprise, for some reason nobody can figure out, has been growing for 10 years and just happens to be ready to go right now. And, of course, it was his apprentice, Count Dooku, killed a Jedi Knight named Sifo Dyas, and then posing as him, went and placed an order for the clones. He hired Boba Fett's dad, Jango Fett, to be the basis for the clones. And then he went off and created a separatist movement and built a giant droid army for himself and split the galaxy in half. And just to make sure that we all understand what's going on, at the end of Episode 2, after Count Dooku, that is Darth Tyrannus, Christopher Lee from the old Dracula movies, after he escapes Yoda, he goes back to Coruscant, the capital planet of the galaxy, to meet with his master.
The Force is with us, Master Sidious.
Welcome home, Lord Tyrannus. You have done well.
Now, good news for you, my lord. The war has begun.
Excellent. Everything is going as planned.
And there you go. Everything is going exactly as planned. And it's really unfortunate, you know, to think the Jedi Knights who are sworn to protect the Republic. I kind of feel bad for Sam Jackson and for Yoda when they finally figure out that the Chancellor is the Sith Lord, and they got to think back on all the thousands of opportunities they had to cut his head off, and they had no idea. So anyway, they're all played like a bunch of puppets, and it's the Jedi Knights who bring the Stormtroopers into battle across the galaxy. In fact, it was fun. I remember when I went and saw Episode 2, walking out of the theater, people walking out going, well, I don't understand. The Jedi Knights bring the Stormtroopers into battle? Yeah, that's exactly right. They think that they're doing the right thing. They think they're protecting the Republic from this terrible secessionist movement. But in fact, what they're doing is being played like a marionette on a string to go out and, you know, here's the galaxy with tens of thousands of Jedi Knights. And they have this giant, stupid war, and most of them die fighting dumb robots. And they all think that they're saving the Republic, when in fact, they are helping to destroy it. And it's funny because, well, not it's funny, but one thing that's funny, I think, about Star Wars, I like the way that they sort of take all the giant kind of, you know, political galactic conflicts and personify them. And it all comes down to blue sword versus red sword in the end. And Obi-Wan Kenobi, in accusing Anakin Skywalker here after turning to the dark side, basically could be saying this very same thing about the Republic or about the United States of America.
You have allowed this Dark Lord to twist your mind until now. Until now, you have become the very thing you swore to destroy.
And, you know, Norman Podhoretz on National Review Online, Norman Podhoretz's son, John Podhoretz, wrote this thing saying, oh, I can't understand why George Lucas is such a hippie now, and now all of a sudden Star Wars is anti-war. Well, come on, it's Star Wars. It's all about having wars. Well, look, stupid. The story was written 30 years ago. And, yes, in the later chapters that we all saw first, the good guys are at war against the evil empire. But the story of how the Republic became the evil empire in the first place is always the same. We know from episode 4 that there was always such a thing as the Clone Wars. That was a big phony war that the Emperor used to consolidate his power. And so, yes, if you let your Republic engage in a period of unending warfare, the centralization that happens will turn your republic into the kind of empire that eventually you're going to have to go to war against. And that's the point of Star Wars. And poor old John Podhoretz doesn't get it. But really, what do you expect from National Review Online? I mean, has anybody ever read a smart thing that anybody ever wrote up there? Anyway, man, I'm sorry I got off on a tangent there. But so, yeah, man, they all got played. The Jedi Knights did. I'm about to ruin Star Wars 3 for you, so if you don't want it ruined, don't listen. This is the new Emperor's first order to his new apprentice, Darth Vader.
Every single Jedi, including our friend, Obi-Wan Kenobi, is now an enemy of the Republic. Do what must be done, Lord Vader. Do not hesitate. Show no mercy.
And Anakin asks, well, what about all the other Jedi? There's Jedi spread all throughout the galaxy at war. What about all of them? And the Emperor says, look, just go kill all the children at the temple. I've already got something planned for the rest of the Jedi. And he types in his button, and he calls up the holograms of all of his clone commanders all across the galaxy.
The time has come. Execute Order 66.
And in one big galaxy-wide night of the long knives, the clone stormtroopers turn on their Jedi generals and massacre them all across the galaxy. In the blink of an instant, there's nobody left but Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda. All the Jedi, thousands and thousands and thousands of them destroyed. And, of course, it was the Emperor who had the clones built all along. And from the time they were grown in their little jars, they had been programmed that Order Number 66 means kill your Jedi that you've been loyal to up until 1 second ago. And so that's exactly what they do. And then, of course, the Jedi go into exile, and the Empire reigns for about 25 years. About 20 years after the Empire is created, we join in the story with Episode 4 and the story of Luke Skywalker. And here's that clip that I mentioned at the beginning about the Senate being dissolved. And this is one of the very first things I ever learned about government and what it means to have representation.
The rebellion will continue to gain a support in the Imperial Senate.
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us. I have just received word that the Emperor has dissolved the Council permanently. The last remnants of the old Republic have been swept away.
Possible. How will the Emperor maintain control of the bureaucracy?
The regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line.
Yep, there you go. That's the nature of tyranny right there. Well, we have a Death Star now, so we don't really need to pretend to have a Senate anymore. The last remnants of the old Republic have finally been swept away, because now we have the ability to just blow your planet right out of the sky. And that is truly unlimited power there. It's funny, isn't it cool how all the Imperial officers are all British? I love that. And I think episodes 4 and 5... particularly are strong references to the American Revolution, although I want to hold off on some of that until the next hour, because I'm going to be talking with Mark Thornton from the Mises Institute all about it. So stay tuned, guys. I'm going to wrap up a little bit more sound bites for you here, and then we'll be back with Mark Thornton on the Weekend Interview Show. guys. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott. And, hey, that clip I just played. In fact, here, let me play it again for you. I got a cue right here.
The rebellion will continue to gain support in the Imperial Senate.
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us. I have just received word that the Emperor has dissolved the Council permanently. The last remnants of the old Republic have been swept away.
Possible. How will the Emperor maintain control of the bureaucracy?
The regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line.
All right, so, yeah, it just so happened during the break, you know, I happen to have the book of Star Wars here, so I flipped to that scene, and it's interesting, the language of the scene in the book is a little bit different. And he says, this is impossible. How will the Emperor maintain control without the bureaucracy? And Governor Tarkin responds, senatorial representation has not been formally abolished, you must understand. It has merely been superseded for the duration of the emergency. The regional governors now have direct control over their territory. So we see how this Emperor Palpatine uses crisis after crisis after crisis to gain more power for himself. Now, in the case of the Clone War, he secretly controlled the leader of the opposition, and it was all a big scam. In this case, hey, Princess Leia is the leader of the opposition. She's no sellout to the Emperor, and yet her rebellion is used by him to the very same effect. And so it's not necessary, I think the lesson is, for, say, for example, FDR to secretly control Tojo. All he has to do is just slap Tojo in the face enough times to provoke Tojo into attacking, and then FDR can do what he likes with your economy. That kind of thing. Yeah, anyway, so by the time we get to episode 5, it's nothing but pure tyranny throughout the galaxy.
Perhaps you think you're being treated unfairly?
Oh, no, please, don't choke me to death.
It would be unfortunate if I had to leave the garrison here.
Yeah, which is beginning to sound more and more like American foreign policy, isn't it? How many times do you think in the last 3 years an American general has told a politician in some little pile of dirt country in Asia, you know, it would be unfortunate if I had to leave a garrison here. I bet you it's come out of the mouths of more than one. And then, of course, episode 6 is cool. It just reveals how the rebels' great plan to attack the Death Star and kill the Emperor was all his idea.
Everything has transpired as done so according to my design.
Come, boy. See for yourself. From here, you will witness the final destruction of the Alliance and the end of your insignificant rebellion. You will pay the price for your lack of vision. No! Only now, at the end, do you understand?
Yes, but see, of course, the flaw of power is arrogance. And the Emperor is so intent on shocking young Luke to death, he doesn't realize that Darth Vader standing next to him is starting to have second thoughts, watching his own son killed right in front of him. But the Emperor's not even paying attention because he knows Darth Vader would never do anything to him. He's more powerful than Vader by a million times, especially since he got his arms and legs cut off. And so, yeah, what's the big worry? And, of course, that's how he gets himself thrown in a pit. And centralized power, of course, fails because it's so dependent on the top dog. When he goes down the pit, the whole Empire falls and everybody lives happily ever after. So how do you like that? Anyways, guys, this is the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm going to be right back with Mark Thornton from the Ludwig von Mises Institute to talk all about the historical analogies of Star Wars and libertarian politics.